SBC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
When Penn Entertainment offloaded Barstool Sports, the company inevitably exhaled, thinking that the long list of PR gaffes were a thing of the past. However, this weekend, an ESPN personality created a problem of can't-lose parlay proportions when his off-the-cuff remark about wagering on ESPN bet blew up the internet. Is this just a public snafu, or is this a matter that could result in regulatory fines? And with this gaffe and some major betting scandals erupting out of the MLB and NBA, is the industry doing enough as a response? We're going to discuss all that and more on today's episode of iGaming Daily. iGaming Daily is presented by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalized player experiences with Optimove. And as a reminder, we are still offering clients a free first month of Optimove when they purchase. For more information, claim the free month, go to optimove.com/SBC. I'm Jessica Wellman, editor of SBC Americas, and I am joined by a guest I'm super excited to get to chat with again. Closing Line Consulting's Dustin Gaucher. Dustin, I don't even know how to give you an introduction because I feel like everyone on the internet knows who you are when it comes to the gambling industry.
Well, I'd have more consulting clients if everyone on the internet knew who I was. So I always need more.
You're giving
exposure.
Too much away on the internet is the problem.
Probably. I do it all for free.
You got to pay all the goods, you know?
Yeah.
Well, for those who don't follow Dustin at Dustin Gaucher on Twitter, he always comes with a lot of opinions about the industry, and justifiably so, because you've been doing this for 10 years? Have 10-ish? We hit that mark?
Legal Sports Report, I started working for it, 2015, I started working for it. Then I discovered last night looking for a college story about basketball that I wrote about a bill that would have banned college sports. Can't even make this up. I was looking for something else. I wrote in college a story about a bill that would have banned betting on college sports. And of course, this is in 2000, circa 2000. I was a senior in college, and it would have only banned anything in Nevada. But it was very random that I came across that in this moment in time when we're going through a lot of regulatory stuff, especially stuff around betting on college sports. So.
You actually gave me a bit of a panic attack last night because I was trying to unwind for the day and saw that tweet kind of in passing and just saw the headline. And I was like, damn it, I have to go open my computer back up. What has Blumenthal done now? So thank God that ended up being a fake one. But no shortage of controversy. You wrote about this. It was very cool to see you on Awful Announcing. So Reese Davis made a very interesting comment on ESPN over the weekend. I'll leave it to you to kind of recap exactly what happened.
Yeah, so Reese Davis, ESPN personality, journalist, doing a College Game Day segment on Sunday morning. As part of that, there's a promotion for ESPN Bet with Aaron Dolan, where they're going over some bets, talking about one particular game where betting the team total under on Northwestern was what Dolan was recommending. Reese Davis kind of wraps up the segment by saying, that sounds like a risk-free investment. I'm paraphrasing there, but the risk-free investment obviously is the thing that got everybody's attention. It was, I think pretty clearly in jest, pretty tongue-in-cheek, what have you. I don't think it was a terribly good joke. The further away I get from it, I guess I'm less mad about what he actually said than the process and the optics around all of it. It comes at a time when things are not going well for the sports betting industry. We have three different scandals around betting in sports right now, to varying extent, and we have people making jokes about, oh, betting is just risk-free investment. I think the biggest part is that literally a year ago this time, just a little earlier than this even, we were basically the sports betting industry said, we're not doing risk-free bets anymore. We're not calling it that. We're not doing any of that. So a year later, we're back to, again, ESPN is not the actual sports book, but they're marketing it here clearly. And they're saying this is a risk-free investment. So I think that those optics plus the the specific language we said we're going to stay away from, and now we're back to bringing it back as a joke, which I think is just, I think that's the part that makes me angry.
The specific word choice is what shocked me the most, because like, how often in your everyday life do you use the phrase risk-free? It's just not something that you say all that often, that it feels very pointed that he would say specifically this. I will also say, I didn't think of it. I get that he said it was a joke. To me, I was like, okay, this guy's just trying to fill air and is speaking and just not thinking. That I didn't even think he was trying to be funny. And then we did see later that he had tweeted. The best part is that he thought this joke was so good, he made it twice, that he had previously tweeted a version of this. But yeah, just those specific words just sent up such red flags to us, because we've been through this whole process. And I've said on this podcast before, I kind of roll my eyes a little at the pat on the back the industry gave itself, that it's like, well, we stopped saying risk-free and pulled out our thesaurus to think of other ways to say risk-free. Good job, us. It's not my favorite move that we've made. Given that it is specifically risk-free, do you think there is potential for a regulator? I think all eyes are on Massachusetts when I ask this question. Is this a regulatory violation? Because it's not necessarily an ad, it's an integration.
I mean, I think there's a chance that Massachusetts does something. I think there's something that there's a chance Ohio goes back and does something. Ohio kind of said, whatever, learning opportunity, right? But then we go, then Davis goes on Pat McAfee and says, oh, I didn't actually apologize. This is clearly a joke. And I'm like, you've already gotten off in one state, and now you're going back and saying, "Ah, oh, I was like, I didn't do anything wrong. What's the matter with? There's nothing wrong with it." So I think there's a chance they go back and look at it, right? And then, other states. There's a lot of eyeballs on ESPN and what they're doing right now. So does it need regulatory intervention? Probably not. What needs to happen, and I think we're going to talk about this more, is that just needs to be more care in how sports betting is communicated to the general public in general. Like, I don't even think this is necessarily Reese Davis's fault, because I don't think he's probably getting enough education and guidance on how we should be talking about sports betting in a sports betting segment on College Game Day. I think that's probably the larger problem than we need to like fine people who are saying this stuff. But yeah, back to your point about like, let's just not say risk free. Let's not joke about it. I mean, the other tweet you're talking about was actually, I think, kind of funny, and that actually matters a little bit. Like, if
actually context,
right? Like that was bagging on Iowa under in football. Like that's funny. I think that's funny stuff when you're talking about Iowa football, notoriously not good at offense, really bad last year. So that, like, it was funny. Like even if the throwaway line had been kind of funny, it was not funny, and it was just kind of like, it was a throwaway line, and it's like, so we don't need throwaway lines that harken back to a time when sports betting, again, was a year ago under the microscope. We don't need that. So yeah, and especially, again, you gave the context at the beginning. ESPN Bet, the parent company Penn, used to be Barstool, and they had these exact same discussions a year ago about, oh, we're just joking about it. It's fine because everyone's in on the joke. Everyone's not in on the joke either, because like, there are people who still today have read all this stuff and think Reese Davis was not joking, and that he thought like he was just trying to promote ESPN Bet by saying this. So like, we can all, like, you and I obviously agree it was a throwaway line joke, but there's people who don't, whether you believe them or not.
We've seen enough studies that indicate that young people in particular, when asked why they are sports betting, their number one reason is to make money, you know, and that's kind of a problematic mindset to have about such a thing. And you see, you know, plenty of social media accounts make this like free money, bet the house kind of jokes. And this one just happened to be on air at ESPN. You know, you mentioned the integrations and what ESPN is kind of doing with ESPN Bet. Eileen O'Brien of the Massachusetts Gaming Commission in particular has been kind of pressing Penn and ESPN to be like, I need a look at what your game plan is of how these integrations are going to go. I've seen you make quite a few statements that do you even believe they have like a 100-page playbook, or does this still feel kind of off the cuff to you of how they've integrated this app into the worldwide leader in sports?
I mean, I don't know if there's a 100-page document. I'd imagine there's some sort of game plan. It does feel very ad hoc, although we also know all of this came together very quickly. It, you know, it happened, late summer last year. It launched in November. So it's still, you know, when we look back at it, it's still early days. But at this point, you assume there's a pretty, you know, vibrant plan of how we're going to do this. And, you know, it seems like it's mostly on TV. It's on the productions. There is where the integrations happen. We've seen Odds integrated into the app for previews of games. We don't see it in content at all, which is the one I rail against. I'm like, if you are doing this deal and you're not, you know, making use of the content that ESPN does, written content that it does, I think you're missing a pretty big opportunity. And it's not clear, like, if that's going to change, if that's a conscious decision, or if it's just not in the roadmap. So, yeah, I don't think there is, like, I'd agree with you. There's probably something between nothing and a 100-page playbook. But I don't buy the argument that ESPN is just over here freelancing as a marketing partner. This is much different than like somebody who's promoting a sports book on their podcast and saying blah blah blah. This is a financial relationship. Penn can get it can ESPN / Disney can take equity in Penn if this deal goes well. I think there's a lot. I think you owe more care to this relationship than your average marketing relationship where, yeah, you're paying somebody for something. Your name is on the sports book. These two things are way more closely related than a lot of marketing deals in sports betting right now.
To play devil's advocate on that a little bit, how is this particular segment with Aaron Dolan and Rhys Davis different than any of the other DraftKings, FanDuel, whatever, Caesars obviously had a big deal with ESPN. They've done integrations before. So, you know, I guess the question is, why should these be treated with a different set of rules and approach than your standard sportsbook integration? Just because it's the same name?
I mean, part of it's just the name is on the sportsbook, right? Like, it's hard to divorce the two things. Like, and that, you know, obviously it matters to you and me, it matters to regulators, but that difference between the marketing licensing deal. Like, people see ESPN bet on the sports book, right? So it's not like there's this huge degree of separation. Nobody has that nuance when they're hearing ESPN content and ESPN bet. Even arguably, aside from the regulatory part, you think ESPN would owe it to take as much care as possible because they have taken, I think, a lot of care in how they present the sports book. This is like the first instance where I'd say they haven't taken that care. Yeah, do we need to get riled up about it? Like you said, these deals exist, but I think that difference between, you know, ESPN is its name is on the sports book. That's at least a little different, I think, from ESPN's point of view. Does it need to be different? I agree. Like, a lot of these close knit ones, like, Barstool is now promoting DraftKings. Can Barstool just say whatever and DraftKings like, well, we don't own Barstool. I guess that works. And should ESPN get that same pass? I there's an argument for that, sure. But I think, you know, again, more for optics reasons and like how things are going in sports betting, I think everybody owes that little bit more of care than we're seeing right now.
All right. Kind of last question on this subject. We all are, you know, it's an optical thing. It's not necessarily a regulatory thing. We've seen regulators come after, you know, television ads in particular, very straightforward ads and inducements on, you know, affiliate marketing and those sorts of approvals. Is there a future where social media posting, integrations within, you know, other media efforts, these sorts of things are going to start to have standards to them?
I mean, there absolutely should be standards to the social media posts. I mean, depending on who it is. I mean, a lot of times that's just branding, but I mean, that can be a funnel for user acquisition too. Absolutely. It is externally more than like the brands themselves for FanDuel, DraftKings at all. Like, those are not necessarily huge conversion funnels, but everybody else doing it around it. Again, the same thing. Like, right now sports books and online casinos can kind of say, well, we don't run them. We just pay them for leads or pay them for flat fees for marketing or what have you. Is that, I just don't know if that's going to fly moving forward. I don't know how you wrap your hands about it. We might get, you know, we might get a federal bill out of it. I've been the first one to say, I don't think a federal bill ever had a chance. And like right now in this moment in time, I feel like it has some momentum. Like, it's not going to get done this year. Like, there's no way. I don't think there's any weird way the federal bill that would limit sports betting advertising gets to the finish line this year. But like, we're giving that effort a lot of ammunition right now. And that's why I'd like to see everything reined in a bit.
All right. We're going to talk more about what the industry should do in response to a really no good, very bad, terrible week of PR when we come back.
SBC Leaders connects the gambling industry's top-tier operators and associations to share the best ideas, collaborate on solving the biggest issues, and push innovation throughout the betting and gaming industry. If you're an operator and want to join the discussion, visit sbcleaders.com for more information.
And welcome back to iGaming Daily. I am Jessica Wellman, joined by Dustin Gauker of Closing Line Consulting. We've talked a bit about kind of the Rhys Davis snafu, and I feel like today is Thursday. That kind of blew up on Sunday. And in the interim, so many things have happened that it feels almost outdated for us to be talking to about it. We have the Ohtani MLB betting scandal. We have the Porter prop shaving scandal. You mentioned a third one. Are you talking about Temple, or is there
going back?
One?
Yeah, going back to Temple, which seems like old news, and we don't know a whole lot about right now. But
they didn't even make the tourney. Who cares? But yeah, these. I mean, I just saw briefly on my timeline on Twitter that Ontario police are looking into the Raptors player. Is it Johanny? Is that his first name?
Jonte.
Jonte Porter, and potentially, I don't know if is it safe to say, like, basically faking illnesses to sit?
Yeah, I mean,
so
allegedly, like, I mean, I'd be careful.
Big allegedly around everything you say for the next 15 minutes.
Right, like, there's an investigation. That's all we know right now. He's not been, there's not more than that known right now, so.
Yeah, and the Ohtani one, you've mentioned this, and I think we all have to say, there's a big difference between somebody or their interpreter making bets with a bookie who is not regulated, who does not function in the space. Like, as much as that story is a scandal, that story would still be a scandal if PASPA had never been overturned.
Right.
Whereas the NBA one, you saw a lot of action at regulated books, that it does feel like these are two very different scandals in terms of scope, right?
Yeah, they're absolutely two different things. And it honestly does take this larger conversation, I think, about the response to these things, because the Ohtani thing, yes, important to realize that it has nothing to do with legal sports betting. That nuance is totally lost in a lot of the reporting and hot takes and things that I'm seeing out there. It's just getting blended in with the rest of them, which, maybe that would happen, maybe not. But I feel like that's a narrative problem from the industry itself that's not getting pushed back on. And there's no one to really push back on that. So, I mean, so just literally yesterday we had the Responsible Online Gaming Association announced seven of the top eight sports books said they're onto this. It's not clear that would be a vehicle to do that, because that's what the remit is, responsible gaming, right? Not purely PR. The American Gaming Association has lots of fish to fry. They can't go and aggregate what everybody in the sports betting industry says. So right now we have everybody out there saying it's sports betting is the Wild West. Ohtani interpreter situation is a result of legal sports betting. And there's nobody out front and center saying, no, I'm saying it, but I have a small voice. My voice is mostly in the industry. Nobody's saying no, this has nothing to do with it. There's like, nobody's going to somebody to ask that question. Nobody is out there loudly banging a drum. This has nothing to do with legal sports betting. That's a communications PR problem. I don't know that there's an answer to it as we sit here, but that's the problem I see, is that legal sports betting is just getting lumped into the Ohtani situations. Like, MLB is in bed with gambling. They're kind of reaping what they sowed, right? That's the story right now. There's some places that have that nuance, but I've seen far more stories saying that Ohtani is a product of what is going on in sports betting in the United States right now. And I don't think that's true. And I don't think it's getting pushed back on in a meaningful way by anyone.
Yeah, you raise a good point that there's nobody saying anything in response to it. But I'm kind of racking my brain on like who that person would be beyond, I guess the best suggestion would be the MLB. And they're in walking a very tight line here where they have to, I would think it's a very difficult PR thread to thread the needle with that. Well, this is illegal and yeah, we're involved and yeah, we make money off sports betting, but this is different. You know, I can see how to a lay person, it can potentially land poorly.
Yeah. It just, and that nuance, it's, I mean, it's not even nuance. It's just that doesn't matter to anyone, to a lot of people. And again, I'd say the general public is also like not making a huge distinction between, like, just what I see on social media, a huge distinction between Otani and other scandals. You know, it gets lumped into legal sports betting. How do you change that narrative? I don't know. And like, yeah, I don't, like, who that person is, like, I don't know, arguably, you know, people like PR from DraftKings and FanDuel should be out there like talking to the people writing these things or doing these pieces on air and saying, hey, this isn't the case. I mean, maybe ideally there would have already been a larger sports betting alliance that is out there doing the PR, right? Because like I said, the aforementioned Roga, not going to be able to do this. AGA, again, I don't think that's, do they want to, I don't even think they want to get into the weeds and like be the one representing all the sports betting companies on their comms. So it, like, arguably another organization should have existed. It's probably not going to exist at this point, I don't think. Maybe it will, but that's I don't know how you, like, right now it feels like you're pushing back against a stone rolling downhill, and I don't see how that's going to meaningfully change. But yeah, it's very clear that, like, this, I even harken back to the Saturday Night Live skit. Like, that was like I don't care that Saturday Night Live got dunked on sports betting, but that kind of is like, that's the represents the public's perception of that Saturday Night Live iterated that skit and put it out and thought, this is something that people kind of understand and get, because SNL is a very mass audience. Like, they get this, and they'll think this is funny. Like, that's kind of a sign of, man, we've lost the plot, and we're like, the narrative is not under our control anymore.
Yeah, we did an episode on that one, and I did a piece on SBC America's. As much as I think some people were a little alarmist about the SNL thing, like, is it earth-shattering? No, but does it say something that out of all the things that you can make fun of about sports betting, SNL decided the thing that was the most funny was the apparent insincerity of sports books when it comes to responsible gambling?
100%. That's the story. It's not the content of the, it's that they pick that topic, right? That is something that is, has enough mass appeal, and that the negative part of it is that you can parody that. And that's, they think, you know, I don't know how many of the regular public thought it was funny, but like some amount probably did. And it's like, but it's that much into the consciousness of America that there's these ads, they're over the top, and that there's a responsible gaming problem. That's a larger communication issue, I think, and PR issue for the industry as it sits right now.
So you mentioned Roga, the Responsible Online Gaming Association. What do you make of the timing of this announcement? Like, it almost felt tone deaf on arrival to me, that it's like, oh, don't worry, we've formed a trade organization.
I'll say this. I know that this has been being worked on for a while. It's not like it started yesterday.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't like Monday. They were like, right, let's ring up the bat phone and get everybody together.
But the timing is that, like, obviously looks suspicious, or maybe there's like, they've been sitting on it and like, oh, maybe we should get this out there now before more stuff happens, I guess. I don't know. I don't make much of the timing other than this has been backstopped for a while, and it was, if they're going to launch it, need to be launched soon before more things happen. And for me, it's, what the question is, does this organization actually have a remit? Is it going to make a difference? I mean, obviously the sharing of data about problem gamblers across sportsbooks, that could be interesting. Or is it an organization that exists to say that it exists, which it feels like it could be that too. I guess we'll see. The proof is in the pudding in terms of, you know, what it does, what it says, and all of that. And, you know, the details on how it's, you know, trying to stop people from, who are identified as a problem gambler at one app, just going to another app and saying, you know, recreating the problems there. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops and what it does, but, you know, a little bit of skepticism that it's going to, like, yeah, again, we're pulling together a lot of large companies. Are they going to be able to, you know, react to things or do things in a way that's meaningful and actually move the needle? We'll see.
Yeah, I think I just have a little fatigue on these organizations, because you have one that was formed by a majority of the major sports leagues, and then Fox Sports and ESPN about advertising. You have the affiliate, Responsible Gambling Affiliate Association, and now you have this one. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, unless you have a purpose and things that you're seeking to actively change, this feels a little like lip service.
Yeah, and we'd all be better served if somehow, like, what a lot of those efforts that you talked about, and, you know, stuff the NCPG is doing, that the AGA is doing, like, all of that should arguably be under one roof somehow, and it's not. And, you know, it feels like a little bit that maybe it's undercutting some of those other efforts. Like, I'm with you, I have some fatigue about it. Like, we have an organization about responsible gaming. Who's doing anything and like changing policy and like actually helping people? Again, maybe this is a narrative problem. I don't know enough about it, but like, I don't feel like there's a whole lot of that's changed. I feel like you have a lot of groups, a lot of people talk about it, including me, and like nothing actually happens. And again, somebody can message me and correct me, but like what has really meaningfully changed in the last couple of years or since the start of online sports betting by any of these groups? And again, I think it feels like it should all be focused and everybody should be like, let's get together and actually figure it out. All those groups should get together and say, what can we do? Or how should we be best deploying our money on this front to actually make a difference? And again, just like it all feels like PR rather than something that's actually trying to do something. Again, narrative problem, but I'd like to like see the nitty gritty and like see what's going to actually happen out of this rather than, oh, we have a group so we can say that we're doing it.
Yeah, I would love to be proven wrong with this, sure. But today we have a lot of movement in Georgia. We had a very good amendment about responsible gambling that made it into that Georgia bill. And I cannot say for certain, but I'm pretty sure that's Breanne Dura-Shawal's doing largely. I would love to hear from the affiliate groups or the, you know, media group. Was this one of your people lobbying in Georgia? Because if that's the case, great. I would love to hear about it. And you should be sending me releases about it because I will write that up in a heartbeat. But I'm inclined to believe that you probably don't want that. Or not that you don't want that, but that your members have lobbying needs and that those lobbying needs probably supersede how much gets earmarked for responsible gambling.
But again, this goes back to maybe they should have been doing this from the beginning, right? Like you and I know that, you know, responsible gambling sometimes gets a line item, sometimes ignored by both in the legislation and then by regulators. Like if we could have avoided some of what we're seeing right now by like that those lobbying efforts that were hugely successful in getting online sports betting passed across the country, like if they had like spent a little bit more, like if the sports books themselves, I mean, I understand at the time they didn't care, but if they had done that then, again, maybe you'd have less of a narrative problem today or actually not less of an actual problem. Like if they could say, they go back and point to like, we passed the law here and we added this amendment for, because most of the time that was not like in the actual like original legislation, even if it was usually added later or like, but if they had this policy right at the beginning, again, it would have taken a lot of people to get together and say, this is what we want to do. But that would have helped, right? If you could say like, we've been trying to do this all along. We like, yeah, they should be like in laws that they're lobbying for right now. They should be like, here's the minimum standards we think should be in a law and regulations around responsible gambling and go from there. That would be, you know, that changes the narrative as well.
Yeah. And instead the narrative is, and I fully understand why the AGA and sportsbooks are opposing the GRIT Act because they still want this excise tax repealed, but like, it doesn't help your cause.
Right.
That somebody wants to put a transformative RG measure in place. And you're like, can't we just not pay that tax at all? It's a stupid tax. I get it. But on that note, I know we're on different sides of this, but the NCAA pushing to ban college prop bets in the remaining states and Ontario where it is still legal. I know I'm not going to, you know what? I'll let you tell the viewers what you think of this. I may know the answer, but they don't.
Yeah, look, the NCAA came out clearly yesterday, I believe, saying that they, you know, want to ban college prop bets everywhere where there's legal sports betting. And like, I get it. Like, in a vacuum, that's a great idea. I would love to see that. And I, my problem is less with like, oh, customers need to be able to bet on college props. I don't really care. That this is, it, again, goes back to even Reese Davis. This is a larger issue in the macro than the micro. Do sportsbooks care if they lose college player props? Probably not. I don't like, it's not a measurable amount. It's, but in the macro, if you start saying this is okay, like, one, you're just, you know, you're signing off on something that makes your product worse, right? Even if it's a, in a small way. And then people come for other stuff. Like, if the NCAA gets their way here, do they then make a push for all college betting? Do people say, well, why are we only betting props on college players? You have the Jontay Porter story. Like, shouldn't we be betting props on everything? So you say yes to this and like, eh, not, no big deal. I think there's a, in the macro, people start coming for other things. And I think, you know, we're talking, like, everybody's like, yeah, this is great. We're going to ban it. Like, you're not banning anything, man. You're banning, you're just stopping legal sportsbooks from doing it. I can go on fantasy sports apps. I can go on sweepstakes sportsbooks. I can go offshore and I can do all these same things. It's fantasy apps. Like, yes, I have to parlay them, but like, you're not stop. You're, you know, the fantasy one in particular, like, there's, this is a huge business. This is entirely about player props. Yes, there has to be more than one. But like, I don't see how that's a meaningfully different policy decision. Like, yes, you can't only manipulate one, but like, if you do one and you have a bunch of people, I don't know. I just don't think it's meaningfully doing anything. What I'd rather see is like, make sure there's really small limits on these things. Let the legal sports betting industry continue to do this, have a competitive product with the three things that I just mentioned, but limit some of the risk. And again, like, and a lot of people have pointed this out, but like, it's not just props. Like, if somebody misses a shot at the end of a game, people are still going to be yelling at college players. Like, it's like, maybe there's a little less yelling because you've eliminated props, but like, there's still like, there, people are still yelling at players and schools and things like that, whether you do this or not. I just don't think the answer solves a problem in a meaningful way. I'd like to see some more interrogation of how to make the problem better. Maybe that's foolhardy and wishful thinking, but that's what I'd rather see.
Yeah, I hear you. I think my defense on the other side of this is I find that some of our optical problem with sports books is that they are not willing to give a millimeter on a lot of things. And so this one, which I for years have found the individual college player prop market very off-putting as a concept. These are young kids. I remember being in college and like, I may have had a scholarship that paid for a very expensive education, but like $100 meant a lot to me. And there are programs in D1 basketball that there are plenty of players that a couple hundred bucks means a lot to them. So like, why put it out there? I would love for DFS Plus sites to stop offering these too. I think it's just the question is, at what point do you have to kind of give up something for the optics to move back in your favor? And this one seems like a pretty easy one to give up, that at least you're right. It may not have a meaningful impact, but at an optical level, it looks like the risk-free changing your synonyms things. It looks like you're at least doing something.
Yeah.
Like, what else do you do instead?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I agree. It would be great to give something. I just worry that if you give it away, that's not going to be the end of it. It doesn't make people happy, right? You just then prove that, oh, you asked for it and we did it. Like, again, that's not going to happen. I think that's probably important to underline. They're not going to, like, sports books are not going to say, yeah, we're not doing college props. That's not going to happen. But if you just let you roll over and let it happen to you too, then again, I think like the NCAA is not going to stop there, right? They're going to want college betting. So do we think oh, we should just not have college betting? I would definitely vehemently disagree with the fact that we should just get rid of college betting, because again, that's, you know, that's a meaningful amount of auction you're sending to all the things, you know, offshore and sweepstakes that are unregulated or gray market. I think that's the problem, is that if you could say in a vacuum, like, yes, we're going to get rid of college props, don't take anything else away from us. Sure. So I'd sign up for that. I think the sportsbooks would sign up for that tomorrow. But I think there's the danger is that you like, oh, what is next? What is the, you know, playing chess? Like, what's next? Do people stop there? And I don't think they do.
You mentioned limiting, like, is suddenly I'm kind of spitballing this. Is there a world where, I mean, the books might even not hate this, where it's like, well, we'll just limit everybody worldwide. We'll limit everybody to, you can only bet, you know, $500 max on something.
Or even less. Or make it something that's just like, it's a novelty at that point, right? Like, nobody's going to like try to fix it. Although then if you have low enough limits, then again, people are just going to try to manipulate it offshore. So is that even the answer? Like, I haven't thought all of that through enough to like say that's the right policy decision. But I think there's some halfway measure between banning it in all states that have legal sports betting and like just letting it go free. I think there's some middle ground that if everybody talked about it, they can get there. But that's again, nuanced discussion that like people aren't interested. NCAA is not interested in nuanced discussion. They just want to ban it. Sportsbooks just want to keep it. And I'm not sure there's that middle ground that anybody's going to actually find and do. So.
Well, that was a very optimistic crowd pleasing winner for the Gipper kind of conversation. It's true though. It's a very nuanced and complicated situation. And as we've seen from this week and how the Ohtani scandal has been handled, nuance is not this industry's forte or the media's forte. So that is where we are at. Speaking of limits, I'm going to hop off this to go join a Massachusetts Gaming Commission meeting where I think they're going to be the first regulators to discuss the act of limiting players. So keep an eye out for that on SBC Americas. Dustin, you have a great newsletter. Please tell people where they can find it and sign up to get more of your insights.
Yeah. So on Substack, you can find it on The Closing Line. It's on my bio on Twitter. Just search for my name and Closing Line and you'll find it. I also have a consultancy, work on content, PR, whatever anybody needs in the gambling industry that you think I could help you with. I do that as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time for a little reunion with me. Much appreciated. And thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next time on iGaming Daily.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.